Assalamu alaikum everyone and welcome back to Thought Behind Things. Aaj ke episode ke andar we have a very interesting guest lineup. You've probably seen the Syrian guys, shawarma story that was extremely crazy viral a couple of years ago. I think it was earlier this year.
Two years back, last year,
F10. Yeah. And it went crazy viral and, you know, all over Pakistan people were watching it and we wanted to try your shawarmas. So we have the Syrian guys here with us. You two are brothers?
Almost, life brothers.
Life brothers, so you're like best friends?
More than that.
Very cool. So I want to start off with a little bit understanding of, and this is what fascinates me the most, because we don't, as Pakistanis, we don't see Pakistan as one of the countries that people would choose if they have like an entire world atlas, right? And this is where we should go, in search for opportunity or in search for anything else. So what made you guys move to Pakistan?
Honest answers.
Yeah, honest answers.
You go.
Okay, I'll go. For me, it was like, you can say Allah sent me here. Okay. I tried to go other places.
Right.
It was all shut just because I'm Syrian. Just because of the Syrian nationality.
Really?
Doors were shut.
And you came here during once the war started?
Yeah, like a year after that.
Okay.
I got a scholarship to UET Lahore.
Right.
And that's how I reached the country.
Very cool.
New word, new experience. But it was amazing.
And did you graduate from UET?
No. After that, we shifted to Islamabad. A year after that, shifted to Islamabad, and we started online courses, online diplomas in business, cooking, programming, different skills.
And you were here just alone or with your family?
Alone.
Alone.
With Haytham.
You both came together?
Yes.
No, like he came almost 6 months before me or 2 months?
To Islamabad.
And after that, I followed him here. And since then, we are together.
Since then, you're together.
And
so the first time that you came to Pakistan was around 6 months after he came.
I don't think so. A month
before him.
Yeah.
And then I shifted to Islamabad 6 months.
Right. And you came to UET as well, or you came here for something else?
My scholarship was to University of Lahore.
Right.
But unfortunately, the admission I got was fake.
Fortunately.
Well, at the beginning, it was like that.
So you basically applied online and basically somebody fooled you?
No, actually, the guy who was in charge of admissions, he is the one who fooled me. Not me, not only me, after I reached the country here, he fooled 15 guys after me.
Really?
Yeah.
And he was actually working at the university?
Yeah.
He's still working at the university?
No. After that accident, he left the university with the cash and he ran away.
And he took all of that cash from you guys?
Not from me, from the other 15 guys.
And basically what he said was you're getting an admission when the university had no idea about it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I wasted 1 year just looking here and there and trying to get admission. Then I said, let's go to Islamabad.
Right.
I contacted Hussam and alhamdulillah. Since then, we are together, living one life.
Yeah.
Two person, one life.
What about the 15 other? Have they all left the country?
Yeah.
Right.
They came here just to continue their studies. They were 2 years away from graduating. But life.
Yeah.
That's life.
And this was, what year was this?
In 2013.
2013. So you've been in the country for almost 8 years. Can you understand a bit of Urdu now?
A little bit, but I can't speak.
You can't speak, but you can understand. You can at least tell when two people are talking about something.
I can talk basics.
Right.
The same case with him.
Wow. Right. Very nice. And when did you start the Syrian shawarma situation in Islamabad?
We started in 2016.
In Lahore.
Oh.
We were dealing with a foreigner hostel.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost Arabs. So we tried our first shawarma there. And alhamdulillah, after we got the results, we said, let's go to Islamabad. And we went to Karachi
Company.
G9. After that, we moved to F10.
Mm-hmm.
And in F10, we got our peak. Alhamdulillah.
Right. But then I saw that you guys left F10 and you, I think, were going to F7 at the time.
Yes.
And that didn't work out, I think, maybe because of COVID.
Yeah.
Exactly. When the market closed, we didn't have enough backup capital to support the property.
Right.
And the lockdown.
Understandably.
Yeah.
But I also saw that the location that you had in F10, and I think your shawarma was called the Syrian Guys.
The Syrian Guys.
And there is still a Syrian Guys over there.
Syrian shawarma.
Syrian shawarma, or something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't see any Syrians there.
Well, to be honest, there is one.
Okay, so there is a Syrian.
There is one who was working with us. Sorry. He was working with us since we were in G9. Mm-hmm. Karachi company. He was making the sweets.
Right.
And later on, like after a while in F10, he decided that he wants to open his own place.
Right.
Yeah. And back then we had paper things, visas. We were doing our visa. But we couldn't stay there.
Right.
So since we were like paying rent to Jalre's kitchen.
Right.
We thought we shouldn't just leave suddenly. We asked Adnan to be there for a while.
Right.
And yeah, after that, we rejoined 3 months later.
Mm-hmm.
So there was two, Syrian Guys and the other.
Right.
A lot of confusion.
Yeah.
A lot of confusion. And in a very short while, it was too small to handle three restaurants there.
Right.
We decided to leave.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's simply as simple as that.
Yeah, it's a little bit disappointing when, you know, you've worked so hard on something and then something like this happens. But I feel like when people who generally have the vision and the idea, even if you go and you go to a new location, inshallah, it'll definitely work out better.
Of course. If you're not depending, if it's really your idea, if it's, for example, in food, if it's your recipes, if it's your management, wherever you go, it will happen, especially nowadays with the social media, the marketing. I don't think physical location can limit you.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially nowadays.
And where are you guys opening the new store now? I heard it's opening in the first week of October, right?
Inshallah, it will be in F7 Markaz, beneath Jesse's.
Right. Oh, that's a very prime location.
Yeah.
Alhamdulillah. It's a very good location and we are preparing a very good sitting area as well.
Oh.
It will be a first. Since
that was going to be my next question, because generally it was more like, come in, take the shawarma and then leave.
Yes.
Yeah, but right now, alhamdulillah, it's legal to have a sitting area out of the restaurant and we are planning to have something good.
So it's going to be a full experience. Inshallah. Are you trying to build a Syrian experience of sorts, or is it more like a fast food place?
For now, it's only fast food.
It's only fast food.
It's a surprise.
something special for the country.
I look forward to it. Okay, I wanna sort of expand on, you've been here in this country for 7 years, and beyond the hoopla and the wow, Pakistan is great, and because I saw a lot of media attention and I saw that obviously in a 15-second ticker, the best thing is, okay, great, it's a great country.
Yeah.
Yes, every country in the world is a great country for the people who, visit or live there. But there is always an experience that someone coming from, let's say, Abu Dhabi and then Syria to Pakistan, or you coming from Syria, and I'm not sure where you were before that.
I came directly from Syria to Pakistan.
Directly from Syria. So you've lived in Syria and you've experienced the people there and you've experienced the lifestyle over there. So can you share a little bit about your experience in Pakistan in terms of the people, in terms of the infrastructure, in terms of dealing with, business dealing and so on?
Well, honestly, for me, I had no idea about Pakistan before coming here.
Right.
Like, even I didn't see any pictures or videos or anything. The only thing I knew about Pakistan is that they produce the best footballs and surgical tools.
Yeah.
The moment I reached the country here, man, like, I was, wow. Seriously, like...
And this was in, you reached Lahore, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all I see around me is green. Green, 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 green everywhere. For me, I love nature.
Right.
So that's a plus point.
And Syria is more more barren in that aspect, greenery-wise?
Yeah, mountains, green. Yes, that's the whole theme.
Like it's more like a desert. Because I...
Kinda, yeah.
Okay.
Kinda.
Right.
If there is a big desert.
Okay.
And Damascus is like nearly a desert, right?
No, it's... Yeah.
Yeah, you can say that. Even the mountain in Damascus is like a rocky, sandy mountain.
Right.
Qasyun, Jabal Qasyun. But still... It's like half and half. Like half of Syria is like greeny, like Mari.
Right.
I can say like very similar to Mari and with the coast.
Mm-hmm.
For example, my city, Latakia, it's on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
Plus it's like 30 minutes away from the mountain, like Mari.
Right.
Yeah. It's
very cool.
I really miss it.
So you can get the best of both worlds.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so, okay, we'll get to Syria in a bit. So what was the experience? So you love the nature. Yeah.
Yeah. And like in every country, you can find bad people mm-hmm. and good people.
Right.
But the point is, don't let bad people distract you from seeing the good.
Right.
And honestly, I didn't feel that I am a stranger in this country. Seriously. Yeah. I didn't feel that I'm a stranger. Mm. Even in Lahore or here in Islamabad, I am part of this country. And alhamdulillah, people... like treating me as a brother.
Yeah.
Even though there are some bad people, but let's not talk about them, man.
Yeah.
Focus on the good.
They're That's everywhere.
Cool. That's cool. And what about in terms of, so what you were mentioning, do you have family in Syria? No?
Yes, of course. My whole family are in Syria.
Okay.
My mother is in Abu Dhabi.
Right. And are you in touch with that family or is it more of an extended family?
Yeah, we are in touch.
Okay.
Not that much, but yeah, we are in touch.
What about you, Haitham?
Well, my family is in Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
They are living in the refugee camp. But the rest of my relatives, some in Jordan, some in Syria. And they are like sometimes contacting and like that. But as long as my family are safe,
yeah,
that's all I care about.
Yep.
And what's the process? If this is not too triggering or anything of that sort, but... what's the process of them leaving the refugee camp?
Well, the thing is, they can leave the refugee camp. They can live in the cities.
But in Syria or Jordan?
In Jordan.
Okay.
But the thing is, like, they won't be under the UN protection.
Right.
And living in Jordan, it's very expensive.
Right.
Like, very, very expensive. And, like, I'm planning to bring them here.
Right.
I'm hoping that my father will agree. But the thing is, like, if they left Jordan to something that it's not, like, 100%
stable,
sure,
yeah,
it's hard to get back to Jordan. Because the moment you leave the country, they will, like, stamp your passport. For the next 5 years, you are not allowed to enter Jordan.
Oh, so you're not going to be considered a refugee anymore?
Yeah.
Right. So you have to make sure that you're extremely stable here.
Exactly.
To make sure that they can join you in Pakistan. And what about Syria? Like, you read the news, but these days it feels like the news is all over the place. Like, every news channel has an agenda. There's always one country who wants one thing, you know. So what's the actual, if you know anything from on ground, what does it look like in Syria now?
You want to talk about it?
It's not that easy, first of all. And if you're following news,
yeah,
you don't get one analysis, right?
Yeah.
The thing is that agendas everywhere. If you look on ground,
yeah,
people are suffering a lot. War have ended. Everyone took his share of land, resources, whatever. Now the people are suffering. And that is not really shown in the news.
Yeah.
What they show you is that where they want you to look.
Yeah.
They want you to look at Aleppo. They don't really like Turkey. They show that, oh, Aleppo is something. But actually everyone, all the people, the citizens of Syria are suffering. Other than that, no one is suffering. The armies... the militias, they are living their life. The citizens of Syria, they are the ones who are suffering. We are talking about water. food, medicines, suddenly it's not available in Syria. And the people who joined that war, they are responsible for that.
Yeah.
It is an international law. Like when you enter a war in a country, you are responsible for these things. You are responsible for the citizens of that country. Otherwise, don't go in it, right?
Yeah.
No one really cares. No one cares, and they're trying to play on nationalism to cover that. Oh, no, you shouldn't say that you need medicine. You shouldn't say that you need that. Oh, Syria, like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think nowadays, even the international governments are they are siding with the Syrian government.
Right.
After all this war, now they are siding with it. So yeah. It's all for vain.
Yeah.
Got it?
Yeah. So, I mean, before 2013 or whenever the war started, 12 or 13, right?
Yeah,
11. So before the war, was Syria a prosperous country? Like, was it something that, was it safe? Was it
heaven?
Prosperous?
Heaven on earth.
Seriously, like, if the war didn't happen in Syria, I don't think I will be leaving. Man, we were living, how to tell you, simple life, everything is available.
Everything. Like, seriously. Fruits, veggies, all kind of food, restaurants, high-end, low-end, entertainment, culture, safe. It was like... I don't know if there is any other country which was that stable. We had a region for production, a region for farming, a region for tourism. It was all completing it. Like we were completing each other.
And actually, the like our neighbor countries, man, every month, like Damascus is filled with Jordanian, Lebanese, Iraqian. They go to Syria, buy whatever they want, and go back to their countries. Like, at least they save more than half the price.
Really?
Yes.
And because you guys were there somewhere around the time the war started, obviously when we see it from the outside, it's more like, you know, okay, there are these rebels and they want to topple the government, and, you know, the way that it's sold is that, you know, the country is in horrible conditions and they want to take the dictator out. And then there is ISIS and then there is so on and so forth. But when it was starting to, like, beginning to happen, what was it? Did it just randomly start?
No.
It looked on purpose.
It was, like, very well engineered.
Very, very well. Very
it
well.
It was planned in a way that no one can understand what's happening.
Suddenly, everything is just falling
apart.
Suddenly.
Like, first 6 months, people, they were, like, demanding their rights. Normal rights.
Yeah.
And suddenly, it started, like, shooting, bombing.
Everybody's killing everybody.
No, to be exact, not rights like freedom or et cetera. No, no. It was one right that there was an officer who did an awful thing in a city. In Daraa city, and the people were demanding that he should be punished.
Right.
That was the only thing. And any sane government would have just did that.
Yeah.
It was a public sin, which needed a public...
Yeah, they needed closure for it, yeah.
But instead...
They did not. They did not punish him, and they refused publicly to punish that officer.
And directly they called us traitors. On the TV, the president himself.
So the government did escalate it then on some level.
On purpose.
Yeah.
Now, on purpose. They knew that this will happen. They knew that this will extend. But yeah.
But they were trying to, like, to control it for the last minute. But people can't hold it anymore.
Yeah, they probably thought that, you know, they will crush this sort of resentment. And I think Arab Spring was happening across the Middle East at the time.
Yeah.
They wanted to make sure that, you know, if they punish this one officer, then the people will be like, you know, we want a better system. So they were worried about the Arab Spring and potential threat to, you know, the government.
Somehow, yeah, somehow. But in the back, it wasn't like this. Well, this government is, like, in control of Syria for the last 50 years. The same family.
Right.
they are considering Syria as a farm for right. themselves. They do whatever they want. They take whatever they want, and no one can question them.
Yeah.
If you open your mouth, you will be disappearing. No mm. one will know where are you. And that was like why people went out. Like, we can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
I am not safe in my own country.
Yeah.
So how the hell I'm supposed to live here?
Yeah.
And like one thing led to another. And
then when the fighting started, I think a lot of other players jumped in, and then there were a lot of global vested interests as well. And yes. then, you know, the ISIS thing happened. And
well, everyone was like playing their cards, and everyone was supporting their people in the country.
Yeah.
Starting from south till north.
Yeah. And then, like you said, like the only losers were the Syrian people.
Of course.
So, wow, that's a lot to take. But you know, that's behind you. Did you actually see any of the fighting going on while you were there, or were you able to avoid that?
Well, at the beginning in my city,
yeah,
not fighting. It was like a strike.
Right.
People gathering, shouting their rights, and the army was like surrounding them. Around them, and suddenly the fire started, like on people and air. Like, it doesn't matter, just shoot.
Wow.
And there were like at least 10,000 people.
So that would have been like God alone knows how many casualties.
And alhamdulillah, like the injuries were around 30 to 50.
Right.
No one killed.
Okay.
Alhamdulillah. After that, man, it turned out as, how to say it?
Chaos.
A chaos movie. Like, every night they shut down the electricity at 3 a.m. and they start shooting, bombing. Randomly. Every night.
And this was your own government?
Yeah. Every night.
I love it.
Every night you have to listen to 5 bombs around the city. It doesn't matter where it. Like,
and which city was this?
Daraa, in the south.
Is this a big city, like a proper, like Islamabad-sized uh-huh. city, or?
No.
It's a whole region. This is the farming region I was okay. mentioned before.
So it was more like a district where?
A district, Huron.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so how do you see the Middle East? And I know, I'm sorry I'm going towards this, but this is the first time I'm meeting anyone who's Syrian, right? So. How do you see what's happening in the Middle East now? Do you think do you finally get some hope now? In the past decade, there's been a lot of confusion, but we see now ISIS sort of going back. We see there is some form of control in Iraq. I don't know about Libya, mm-hmm. But at least, you know, even if Egypt is again back to a military regime, it's still somewhat stable. So do you see Middle East now going back to its normal, pre-war levels? Or do you think, again, with Lebanon, again, there is destabilization over there as well? And
do you know the history of the Middle East?
I know
in
very
general, in
rudimentary.
General.
Generally, yeah.
After the Ottoman Empire was controlling almost the whole region.
Yeah.
The Western world, the European France, Britain, the designist, they united. They were united against the Ottoman Empire to get it down.
Right.
And after that, after the Ottoman Empire was removed from those districts, they started colonizing us. Huge wars, rebels, casualties from both sides. In the end, they decided that we're leaving.
Okay.
This is like a very stupid move.
Yeah.
We should leave, give them the illusion of the independence. Oh,
yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah,
have
just like
fun, enjoy it.
Randomly cut lines and give people independence.
Yes,
yeah.
Enjoy it, get the borders, get rents from those people, you know, tenants.
Yeah.
I think this is the normal state, decolonizing. And right now if you ask anyone, he will say, I would prefer being controlled by France or Italy than to be controlled by our governments. And this is what they want.
And I think that's what I saw in Lebanon as well, right after the bomb blast, right? Exactly. Like, the French president came in and...
Yeah.
And the entire public was like, okay, fine, like, please take control of us because we can't
handle
it.
No one would mind.
Yeah.
No, not even one citizen in the Middle East would mind getting, like, being colonized again. You know?
But do you feel like that's they've sort of gaslighted the population in a way that now you'd rather choose modern day slavery over your own self, because they've basically destroyed the idea of your own national identity so much.
It was a slavery.
Yeah.
It is a slavery.
Still.
Right now.
Yeah.
Like, how do you know that you are a slave? For example, now I can't go back to Syria, because if I want to go back to Syria, I need to serve the government. I need to serve. As a citizen, I'm a soldier.
Yeah.
Whatever orders I get.
Yeah.
That is slavery.
Yeah, you don't have the freedom to choose, right?
That is slavery. Whether they say this is like against Israel or whatever, man, if it's freedom.
Yeah.
If I don't like to do something, you cannot force me.
Yeah.
Right? Unless there is a war against us.
Yeah.
An invader is coming. Okay, of course, everyone will protect his house at least.
Yeah.
But for 40 years to be a soldier, doing their giving them tea to protect you from Israel, that is bullshit. Sorry for that.
Yeah.
And this is how it is everywhere. And as I said, they pushed the people of the Middle East to choose them. Instead of being invaders, now they will be liberating us. A very bad story.
Yeah.
But this is how things go.
And how, so there is that oil belt, you know, with the UAE and Saudi and Qatar and Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is more of a technocratic side of the Middle East, right? With Egypt and Syria, where people are more, you know, the labor force is stronger, the people are more educated, people are more, I wouldn't say empowered again, as you mentioned, but, you know, there's Turkey, or at least, I mean, I wouldn't consider Turkey to be part of the Middle East, I would say.
Not really, yeah.
Yeah, but Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and Egypt, these countries were never really dependent on oil.
No.
They were more dependent on...
Brain.
Yeah. So how do you differentiate between these two sort of sides of the Middle East? Because for Pakistan, and you've probably seen, talked to a lot of Pakistanis, we've never really, I mean, we jump to UAE, like that's no big deal. There's a ton of us in even Saudi or Qatar or Kuwait, but we've never really gone to Egypt or Syria or Lebanon. So we don't really have an understanding of what's the difference between cultures, what's the difference between economy, you know, between both of those.
Well, the thing is, when you are talking about Gulf area, you are only talking about money and oil.
Yeah.
That's their power. Nothing else. No brains, no people. So they needed, if what I'm going to say will be like in a right way, but they needed laborers.
Right.
Teachers, builders, engineers, doctors, in every
aspect of the society.
And everything. Like our fathers, our grandfathers, they built their countries.
Right.
And in the end, you got nothing.
Yeah, you have to go back. You can't even get the nationality, right?
No. Don't dream about that.
Can't even get a visit visa. For God's sake.
But that's what I'm trying to understand, because it's the same with let's say Pakistan. It's the same with, I would say, Indonesia. When we look at Muslim countries as overall globally, the only Muslim countries who've done well are the ones with oil money. Do you think that is primarily because of the fact that we lost that sort of glory after the Ottoman Empire, and then we were sort of unable to ever bounce back? I mean, I know it's a very, very difficult question.
It's not actually, no.
How do you define an Islamic country?
A country where predominantly the population is Muslim. So I wouldn't say it adheres to the values of religion, because that's a very open to, you know, discussion, or how the Muslim countries have been behaving in the past 100 years. But at least where primarily the majority population considers themselves Muslims.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's and because that's why we fall. Why we fell.
Why? Before. There is some sort of a... Is there a there mosquito a somewhere? I think that, yeah, there is a...
I'm being attacked. Is that the government? That's why we fell. Because we considered being a Muslim is just by birth.
Right.
We consider the glory of Islam is just because we were Muslims.
Yeah.
That's not.
Yeah.
Because before it was desert, very basic territory. Okay, rich tribes and everything, but nothing even close to glory.
Yeah, no education, no productivity.
No civilization.
Yeah.
When they started to follow the values of Islam.
Yeah.
Which are the Western are following right now.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Then we reached our peak, we reached our glory.
Yeah, this and was the time when sort of Baghdad was
the
burnt.
Whole region, exactly. The whole Hijaz. Yeah. The whole Hijaz. It was mixed between tribes, villagers, farmers, all one, all Muslims, no borders, nothing. If there was a Muslim in South America, he's us.
Right.
That is our nationalism, you can say.
Yeah.
And that's why we rose. And the fact that people starting like, okay, no, now we are Muslims. It means we are on the top. That's it. It's enough to be named a Muslim.
Yeah. So it's at the arrogance that the destroyed
exactly.
them. It is the arrogance and then the politics that followed where, you know, the Iran and Saudi and,
exactly.
you know, every country wanting to be the,
yes.
the head of the family,
mm-hmm.
you know.
It's what happened with the Jews
yeah.
before Islam. This is exactly what happened to the Jews. Like they were the chosen people by Allah.
Right.
And when they got too arrogant that, oh, we are the chosen ones, now we can do whatever we want, they fell.
Right.
And they know that. They know that. And they want to reclaim their position. This is the whole, their core agenda to reclaim this position.
Right.
They were, in the Quran, it's mentioned that they were the chosen people and then they were punished.
Right.
Done. That's it. This is what happened with us. And I hope, I really hope that Muslims will finally understand that Islam is not about what you wear. It's not about the beard. It's not about those things. It's about values.
Yeah.
Being good to yourself, being good to your neighbor, being good to the nation.
Yeah.
To the nation, not to the border.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's how we rise again.
Yeah. And that's a very powerful thing to say because I feel like that's this sort of value you'll find all across Europe.
Yes.
And they took and if you look at Europeans when they sort of started invading or the British Empire for that matter, they were actually this very, you know, warrior nation while they were, you know, fighting their way through the entire world, you know, the Ottomans or the Mughals in the subcontinent, they were building, you know, mausoleums and
yes.
all of those things, and they were invested in art and culture, and a lot of the, you know, global GDP was controlled by the, you know, Muslim countries.
Yes.
So it's not like they were ahead of us all throughout history.
Oh, no. No, no. This is very recent.
Yeah.
Very recent. It's only after the World War II.
Yeah.
Like, let's say 100 years.
Yeah.
It's the reason of the World War I and II.
Yeah.
And they did what they do, and they separated us, gave us borders. Right now, forget your history, forget about your religion. And fight for these borders.
Yeah, it's a divide and rule, right?
Exactly.
Divide and rule.
Yeah. And I feel like I was just watching this, you know, Azerbaijan and Armenia conflict yesterday.
Yeah.
And I saw that it's all because of a gas pipeline. You know, Armenia is being supported by Russia and then Azerbaijan is supported by the West and Israel because they're providing an alternate source to the gas to Europe from Central Asia. And it fascinates me how, you know, we just what people end up consuming. You know, it's all about nationalism. Oh, Azerbaijanis are this, yes, and Armenians are this. Uh-huh. And in the end, it's all happening because some companies are profiting.
Resources.
And if you, resources, if you look, right? If you look at it, it's always the small guys.
Yeah.
The big guys are sitting in the back and watching and like moving. You go there and you go there.
Yeah.
You suffer, you lose. I don't care.
Yeah.
All I want is my things.
Yeah.
And I will get them in the end.
Yeah.
Even if I have to kill you myself, I will do it.
Yeah.
One he button
doesn't
and.
Mean you.
I don't think I have a lot to offer you. But yeah, I understand. And do you think, most recently we've seen the Turkish prime minister or president. I think it's the president.
President
Erdogan. He's been talking a lot about reviving the Muslim world, and he's been talking a lot about how, and they've, you know, with the TV show Ertugrul, and they've been trying to revive the idea of the Ottoman Empire, and I think that the Treaty of Versailles sort of expires in 2023 as well. Mm-hmm. So I think they're sort of now positioning themselves to create sort of a modern technocratic Muslim union of sorts, I would say. You know, something long modeled along the lines of European Union, where people can, yes, be independent, but sort of can work together in a single vision. Yeah. Do you find that hopeful?
Well, for me, look, I don't care about his politics, ways, thinking and anything. But what he has done for Turkey in the past 10 to 15 years.
Yep.
No one ever have done that to their countries.
And do you genuinely think Turkey has changed in the past 15 years since Erdogan has come to power?
Even if we both said no, you can just search it on internet.
Yeah, I mean, we search it on the internet, and I feel like, unfortunately, people have a very small sort of memory, right? And even when you're looking at things on the internet, it doesn't seem like, oh, you know, Erdogan made Turkey, but what does that even truly mean? unless it's someone who's closer to that region, or maybe, you know, because Syria borders it.
Yes.
And you guys probably interact with a lot of Turkish people from there. So you've probably sort of experienced firsthand communication of how Turkey was back in, let's say, early 2000s, and then how Turkey is today. When they're talking about the fifth generation, you know, aircraft and the electric cars. And even in Pakistan, you know, the best tiles are from Turkey, the best furniture is from Turkey. And that sort of really makes me proud, because it's not the oil that we're buying, because the oil is something that God gave us.
Yes.
Yeah. But the furniture is something that, again, something that God gave us. It's just a brain, but it's something that where human beings are actually putting in some sort of an effort. So I feel like if he can do that with Turkey, maybe, because the last time we were talking about a Muslim union with Gaddafi and you know, King Faisal and Bhutto in Pakistan, you can see all three of them died in mysterious circumstances, right? So do you think we can actually now begin to imagine potentially creating sort of a union of sorts, or do you think we're too divided to do that now?
Too divided.
You're not
too
hopeful.
Too divided and too owned. We are owned. Unfortunately, that is true.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what it will take to change that, but we are owned. And even though, let's say that Erdogan wants to unite the whole region under the Ottoman rule, like what they did back then, they did not develop Syria when it was under the Ottoman Empire.
Right.
At all. History's there, people are there. And you can still find people who have history under the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good experience for Syrians. Although, as a government or as an empire, the Ottoman Empire were great.
Yeah.
Really, really, really great.
Very powerful.
But they were using extra land, they were increasing the army from those what do you call them, like the countries who
colonial states, sort of
some kind like that,
yeah,
they were using them, using the resources, using their manpower.
Yeah.
To build the Ottoman Empire.
Right.
Not really sure if that was wrong. If again, we are talking in borders. We are talking like Syria, Turkey. We shouldn't talk like that. If we were all building a Muslim empire, there is no wrong in that.
Yeah.
But
then fact remains, right? At the end of the day, that the more south you went, the more less developed it was at the time.
Yes.
And I feel like, so that's why I said, you know, I don't see the country sort of mixing together. That's not a modern day idea, mm-hmm. right? To sort of join borders and create a single country. But I do feel like maybe if we sort of create a union along the lines of, you know, let's say European Union.
Like European, yeah.
You know, if I can just without a visa go to Iran and then travel from there to Turkey and then to Syria mm-hmm. or wherever, and, you know, all the way extended from Pakistan all the way down to, let's say, you know, Turkey and all the way down to Africa, I think that'd be a great thing. And if we could have a single currency and we could, you know, distribute our manpower.
Man, that's everyone's dream.
That's the dream, right?
Mutual Defense Pact.
Yeah.
I mean, how easy is that? Seriously. Yeah. Is it really hard?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, 15, 20 states, and we have a single nuclear bomb. If we had a union, right, would every country need to build their own bomb?
We don't need bombs.
That's true. But even, I mean, what I'm trying to say is that in terms of innovation, you know, where Turkey is today, we can use that innovation and be creating those sort of furnitures and, you know, construction material and all sorts of things all across the union. But unfortunately, we have this sort of a mentality where we don't trust our fellow Muslim neighbor as much as we trust the Europeans.
Well, the thing is, look, the price we are going to pay to build our own Muslim national, it's very, like, very low. But not everyone is willing to pay that price.
Yeah.
Start with yourself. Build yourself. And that's it.
Build the power, build the glory, former lost glory. And then maybe we can hope to...
If you started from yourself, change yourself to be a good human.
Yeah.
You will be good for your neighbors. Your neighbors will spread this goodness.
Yeah.
But right now, like you can see, some people, they don't talk to their neighbors.
Yeah.
As if they don't exist. Relatives, brothers, sisters, like we lost this connection.
Yeah.
If I love for myself something good, where is the harm of giving this thing to my brother?
Yeah.
I will build myself and he will build himself. In the end, we will build our neighborhood, then the city, after that, the whole country.
Yeah. It's sort of like a bottom-up approach instead of a top-down, you know, fix the country and then we'll fix ourselves. If you can just fix yourself.
Happen.
Yeah, that will never happen. Yeah. But this is an interesting conversation and very enlightening, to be honest. Thank you so much for you guys for being here.
Well, thank you for keeping us here.
But the Syrian Guys opens in F7. It's still called the Syrian Guys?
The Syrian Guys.
All right. So Syrian Guys opens in F7. This is right below Jesse's. We have Haitham and...
Hassam,
with us today. We had a remarkable conversation. I hope you learned something from it. My name is Saeem Azam Al-Hassan Zaidi. You were watching Thought Behind Things. Thank you so much for watching, and I'll see you in the next one.